Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. In this world of competing attention, how can we tell if marketing is actually working? Hey friends, it is great to have you here in the studio with us. My name is Campbell, and right now I have one of my good friends, Peter, with us. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Campbell. Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
Well, we always appreciate our audience taking the time out to listen to our program. You know, there's so many different things that they can be listening or watching nowadays, so definitely we appreciate that you are taking the time to listen in on this program and learning with us. So today we're talking about an interesting topic. We're talking about marketing. Now, when you think of marketing, Peter, what do you think of?
Yeah, marketing, I think of basically advertising, how you market something, how you, you know, take it to a market to sell it. And in a broader sense, then how do you sell it to the wider society that you're in? How do you make it appealing? How do you advertise its presence and encourage people to want to buy it?
Right. So it is something that is important. You know, if you have a product or you have a service, you definitely want to get the word out. You want people to know about it. You want people to be interested in it and eventually maybe spend money on it. But how do you get people to pay attention? There is so much out there right now with social media, with television, YouTube, all these different things. So many things competing for people's attention. So how do you get people to pay attention and eventually maybe want to buy? So today's article is called Designing for the Gasp. What is a gasp?
Oh, well, a gasp is what you just did right there at the end of your statement, where you're sort of, you catch your breath and you inhale sharply. That is a gasp, and it's something that we do involuntarily, meaning without thinking about it, when we're frightened or when we're surprised. It can be either a good or a bad thing, but yeah, it means, if nothing else, a surprise of some sort.
Right, yeah. So, you know, you and I are both actors.
Yes.
Right. So we both had some training and have a lot of experience trying to emote.
Yes.
On stage or on TV or on the radio, right? And this is something that we're often taught how to do, right? This is something that we're often trying to experience in our acting.
Yes,
would you
exactly.
agree?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, maybe not every moment in a play that you're performing in, maybe not every moment is a gasp moment, but certainly a gasp for the theater actor is an indication that the audience is with you, that
yes.
they are following the story, they're taken in by the illusion that you're creating with your scene partners, and at a particular moment in the play that the playwright has designed, hopefully, the audience gasps at some sort of revelation or something that a character did or said that was particularly powerful. And if you, it's great. That's a wonderful thing about live acting when you're on stage is that you hear the audience actually go, like,
yeah.
collectively, like
yeah.
that. It's something you don't get, you know, from movie making.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's a pretty amazing experience when you do get to have that moment,
yes.
right? When you get to have that moment of just this collective gasp or this collective sense of everybody's just so engaged in that one moment.
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of the goal for these advertisers nowadays. They want to create these collective moments where people experience something emotionally as a group and not just as individuals. All right. Well, let's get into our article and let's learn a little bit about designing for the gasp.
Designing for the gasp, the most valuable metric in marketing. I'll never forget the first time I saw the power of a group gasp. Years ago, at a Baltimore Ravens American football game, A film I'd helped create played across the stadium's newly installed LED screens. In the climactic moment, the entire crowd seemed to freeze, breath held, before erupting in a wave of energy that swept the stands. That's because the shot was perfectly timed with the real kickoff that started the game. Picture 70,000 people rising to their feet in unison, their collective gasp creating a moment of pure electricity. That wasn't chance. It was the result of designing an experience where story, environment, and audience collided to spark a visceral shared response. This group gasp, that instant of collective visceral awe, has become the holy grail of modern brand experience. In a fragmented world where people crave connection, brands aren't just competing for attention. They're competing to orchestrate shared emotional resonance.
All right. Thank you, Linda, for reading that for us. Okay. So designing for the gasp. We have a deck here. It says the most valuable metric in marketing. Now, there's an interesting word here, metric. What are we referring to here, Peter?
Right. Metric here. Interesting. Normally, we think of metric perhaps in terms of the metric system. And in a way, that's not too far from what the word means by itself. Mm-hmm. By itself, metric just means a way of measuring something, a unit by which something can be measured, not necessarily just inches or centimeters or feet, but in business and in marketing particularly, a metric in marketing is how you measure the success of your marketing approach and, you know, what that unit of measurement is.
Yeah, exactly. And I started the program asking a question, how can we tell if marketing is working, right? And one of the metrics, one of the ways of measuring that is this gasp, okay? So what are we referring to when we talk about the gasp? Well, the author starts the article saying, I'll never forget the first time I saw the power of a group gasp. Okay, so this is a very important concept here, right? The group gasp. We're not just talking about an individual person feeling touched. It's this sense of what we were talking about earlier, where everybody at the same moment feels something.
Yes.
Yes. So when did this group gasp happen for this author?
Right. Well, for the author who is involved in filmmaking, he had helped to create a film that played some years ago at a Baltimore Ravens American football game. The mm-hmm. Baltimore Ravens in the National Football League, the NFL, were playing a game and in their home stadium, and a film that the author had helped create played across the stadium's LED screens, their newly installed LED screens. So this was perhaps the first really big thing that the screens had shown or that the fans had seen played on the screens.
Right.
And he says, in the climactic moment, the entire crowd seemed to freeze, breath held, before erupting in a wave of energy that swept the stand.
Yes. All right. So let's take a look at this word climactic. It's one of our vocabulary focus words. It means forming a very exciting or important part of an event or story. So usually when you're reading a book or you're watching a TV show or a movie, there's a climactic moment. This is when all the events, everything that's happened kind of reaches this high point. Right. It's a very exciting moment or a very emotional moment. It's a very powerful moment. And at that moment, at this football game, the entire crowd seemed to freeze, breath held. Okay. So imagine you're just kind of sitting there and you're waiting. Okay, what's going to happen next? What's going on? And you're just kind of like anticipating with bated breath. Okay, you're excited and you're just kind of drawn into what's happening in the film. Okay, and that's what this climactic moment. Now, when I read this, what was interesting for me is usually when we think of gasp, we think of what I did earlier, that
yeah.
that inhale, yeah. right? But this was more of a kind of like a just silence.
Right, right. This was more like a tension, a sort of suspense. We have a phrase, being on the edge of your seat, where your attention is completely focused on the screen or the stage or whatever, the playing field, whatever it is you're watching from a seated position. And in this case, yeah, it was, the author talks about a group gasp here, but this was sort of more an emotional gasp rather than a literal physical gasp, because he says that their breath was held before they erupted into a wave of energy that swept the stands, erupted into a cheer, presumably, throughout the stadium.
Yeah, so it was almost like there was a pause, and then there was a release.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of the idea that we're talking about. And there were 70,000 people rising to their feet in unison, meaning at the same time, and their collective grasp creating a moment of pure electricity. Now, we can tell that this happened probably at the start of the game, because it talked about the kickoff that started the game. So this was right in the beginning of the first few moments of that game. Now, did this happen accidentally?
Oh, no. He goes right into the second paragraph there by saying that wasn't chance, which is to say luck or just a random coincidence. It wasn't chance. It was the result of designing an experience where story, environment, and audience collided to spark a visceral shared response. Collided, normally we would use that to describe a collision of some sort.
Like a car accident.
Car accident, yeah. Or, you know, I was carrying a stack of boxes and I collided with someone as I was walking down the street because I didn't see them, something like that.
Right.
But here, collided can sometimes be used to mean sort of things that mix together or things that just come together,
exactly.
Not in a harmful kind of way, but in a way that creates something new out of their coming together.
Right. So these three things, story, environment, and audience all came together, and that created basically a bang, right? It sparked a visceral shared response. What do you mean by the word visceral? We use it a couple of times in this article.
Yeah, visceral, good word. Belief or an attitude or anything that happens, it means is the result of strong feelings if it's visceral rather than careful thought. So something I might do because I was very powerfully emotionally motivated to do it. I had a visceral response. You know, I saw this starving child about to get hit by a car, let's say, and I had a visceral response to it. I didn't just think, oh, isn't it terrible that that child is starving and that traffic laws aren't more enforced or something like that. No, I had a visceral response, and I jumped in front of the car and grabbed the child, and we rolled to safety on the side of the road, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Visceral means something that happens as the result of strong feelings rather than careful thought.
Yeah, strong emotions. It's not something that's just mental, it's just like, oh, you know, like logical thinking.
Right.
It's very emotional. And, you know, probably had that experience when you proposed to your wife, maybe.
Certainly.
Yeah. So we have visceral responses to many different things. And visceral sometimes can be anger, can be frustration. Sometimes I have a visceral response when my kids don't listen to me and I burst out in anger.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. A visceral response is not necessarily a good thing. It just means something that is sort of spontaneous and you do it without thinking and it's very emotionally driven.
Yes. All right. So in this next sentence, we say this group gasp, that instant of collective, again, this everybody doing it at the same time in unison, collective, visceral, there's that word again. This sense of just, it's not just cognitive, you're not just thinking about it, it's actually a feeling of like, oh, wow, that was amazing, has become the holy grail of modern brand experience. Okay, so let's break that phrase down. What are we talking about when we talk about the holy grail of something?
Right. Well, the holy grail is taken from the Arthurian legends of Great Britain. If you've heard of King Arthur, perhaps, and his sorcerer Merlin, and the adventures that they have in a sort of fantasy medieval Europe, medieval Britain. And one episode in the Legends of King Arthur concerned the quest, a search that he goes on. He and the Knights of the Round Table, they go on a quest for the Holy Grail. The Grail, the word literally just means a cup of some sort. And so the Holy Grail was actually the cup that Jesus Christ is believed to have drunk from at the Last Supper he had before he was crucified on the cross. Mm. And so this was a task, this was a quest given to the fictional King Arthur to find this cup, this Holy Grail, as a way of proving himself and establishing the idea that, yes, he was the rightful king of England at that time because he was able to find this Holy Grail. And so you hear about it in modern language as something that is the great sought-after prize or the ideal thing to achieve mm-hmm. in a particular field. If you've, you know, figured out cold fusion, that's like the Holy Grail of particle physics or something like that.
Yeah. So, like, that's the ultimate achievement.
Right, the ultimate achievement.
The ultimate achievement, the ultimate sign of success, right?
Yeah.
Of here, the Holy Grail of modern brand experience. So every brand, every company, every product is looking to be able to achieve this visceral collective awe, this gasp. All right. And the reason for that is it says, in a fragmented world where people crave connection, brands aren't just competing for attention. They're competing to orchestrate shared emotional resonance. So this is a very packed two sentences here. First, fragmented world. What are we referring to?
Right. A fragment, anything that is fragmented, is broken up into pieces, many little pieces or fragments.
Do you feel like our world is a fragmented world right now?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It is. I mean, our world is such a complicated thing that there are ways you can look at it in which it is fragmented and ways you can look at it in which it is more unified and more of a whole.
Sure.
So it depends on the perspective that you take. But certainly, our world could be described as more fragmented now because of the way we all have our own little groups and communities that we can connect with largely through social media.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, sometimes there's a basic collective unity that gets lost as we're all following up on our own little personal preferences and such.
Yeah.
And we end up with a fragmented society.
Right. And because of this fragmented society, people are craving connection. They're really longing for, desiring to connect with other people. And so it's not just about attention anymore. It's about creating shared emotional resonance. Now, that's an interesting phrase, emotional resonance. What are we referring to?
Right. Well, resonance means something that has meaning or is important to you because it relates to your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Something that that's what every politician tries to do with every speech, is to have the speech resonate with the voters, if the politician is campaigning for the office, to have his speech resonate with the voters and say, yeah, that guy understands my experience.
Right.
I'm going to vote for him. So a shared emotional resonance means, something that resonates with us on an emotional level.
Yeah, and when you're comparing it to a fragmented world where people have different opinions and different, you know, likes and dislikes, having something that connects and pulls everybody together and everybody can agree on, that's kind of the goal that we're aiming for.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Let's continue the rest of this article and then we'll be back to discuss.
From spectacle to lasting impact. The roots of immersive brand experiences run deep. In the late 1990s, it was about shifting from a one-way monologue to the customer to a democratic conversation with them, entirely reimagining the relationship between people and brand. Today, environments like Sphere in Las Vegas or New York's Oculus Transit Hub blend architecture, storytelling, and cutting-edge tech to create collective awe. Outside these venues, brands are playing with physical space to show up in ever more seamless, smart, and impactful ways. But here's the real shift. Experiences no longer end when the audience walks away. Social media amplifies a single moment of wonder into a global phenomenon, extending impact for weeks or months. The gasp becomes evergreen content. The goal of shared emotion. Technology may set the stage, but it doesn't guarantee resonance. The magic lies in emotional choreography. guiding audiences through intimacy, tension, and release. Like a great film score, the best experiences ebb and flow. Different brands call for different emotional tones. There's no universal formula. What matters is intention.
All right, so there seems to be a shift in how advertising has happened over the past 30 or so years, right? So what happened in the late 1990s?
Right. This is an interesting thought, actually. I was stimulated by this. And it says in the late 1990s, it was advertising was about shifting from a one-way monologue to the customer to shifting from that to a democratic conversation with them,
right.
Entirely reimagining the relationship between people and brand.
Now, you were alive in the 90s.
I was indeed. Yes. Way
back. Did you experience this kind of shift?
I can see it in retrospect. I can see it as I look back.
Right.
I think at the time, I didn't notice it
happening.
You
weren't aware of it.
Right.
It was very subtle.
When they describe it this way, I can look back and sort of see that. Because, yeah, particularly in the 80s before that, when I was also alive, and watched a lot of television,
yeah.
I remember ads in those days where, for the most part, here's the product, here's why you need it,
right.
Here's why it'll make your life better.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they mean by a one-way monologue to the customer.
Yeah.
And the customer was happy with that.
Right.
The customer was like, yeah, tell me about the product. Should I buy it? Should I not?
Right.
Convince me.
Yeah.
But it's interesting now how in the late 1990s, this whole model of advertising appears to have shifted to having what is described as a conversation with the customer. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but it is in some way different from this one-way monologue of just presenting the product and saying, buy it or don't buy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I think of, you know, I think the classic example for me is, you know, there used to be this show in the U.S. called I Love Lucy, right?
Yes.
And there's this classic episode where she was selling Vitamina Medjugorje or whatever, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, there's like this supplement product or whatever. And if she's just like trying to tell the audience about this product and what it did and all that stuff. But eventually, you know, as you said, like retrospect, as I look back to when we were younger in the 90s and then it started to be more about storytelling, you know, right?
Mm-hmm,
the advertisements weren't so much about me telling you, talking directly to the camera. It was actually, some of them became more like short films.
That's
in
true.
Some
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, you would follow a character around and only at the end would you realize, oh, they need to switch to this life insurance company.
Right, yeah.
Or because they invested with this bank, now they have a nicer car and they have a nicer vacation for their family or something like that.
Yeah, so it became more storytelling rather than just monologue, me talking to you about the product, right? And nowadays, it's almost come out of the TV, right?
Yep.
In the next paragraph says, today, environments like Sphere in Las Vegas or New York's Oculus Transit Hub blend architecture, storytelling, and cutting-edge tech to create collective awe. So it's not just me sitting in front of a screen. It's almost like it's an immersive
experience. Immersive. That's a word I think they've already used somewhere in the article, perhaps. And, well, right there in our section here, the roots of immersive brand experiences run deep, as it says.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Now, it's not just these two places that they've mentioned. Outside these venues, brands are playing with physical space to show up in ever more seamless, smart, and impactful ways, right? So I think of Times Square where it's just...
You're surrounded. Yeah, talk about immersive.
Yeah, but here's the real shift. Okay, here's the real shift. So all that was great, but here's the big difference. What is the big difference that we're referring to here?
Right. Experiences no longer end when the audience walks away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a real good insight. Social media amplifies, makes bigger, makes louder, amplifies a single moment of wonder into a global phenomenon, extending the impact for weeks or months. And the gasp becomes what they call evergreen content. Evergreen, a kind of tree originally that never changes its leaf color throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
It's just stays green.
Right.
We're pretty familiar with that sort of thing in Taipei,
right.
I would say, maybe less so in the United States. But yeah, it remains popular or fresh, the content of the ad in this case.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in the past, basically, when you saw the ad, once it went away, it went away. But now people, and especially since it's such an experiential thing, people are recording it on their phones or sharing it on social media, and that just kind of extends the life of the advertising. It's not just a one-off anymore.
Right,
it's a very, you know, continual thing that people can experience and watch over and over. And we talk about going viral, right? This experience, like where everybody starts sharing and talking about it. Right. Now, is fancy equipment and technology enough to create this shared visceral resonance experience?
Fancy equipment and technology definitely play a part, but as our next section is titled, the subhead there, the goal of shared emotion. And it says, technology may set the stage, meaning it may create the foundation, but it doesn't guarantee resonance, that shared emotional resonance that we were talking about earlier. The magic, the key, lies in emotional choreography.
Yeah, that's an interesting phrase there, emotional choreography. Now, usually when we talk about choreography, we're talking about coordinated movements, right? Maybe like a dance or in movies, you know, they have choreographed martial arts, choreographed fighting, you know, choreographed movements, right? But here we're talking about emotional choreography. That's kind of hard to understand. Could you explain a bit
more? Right. Well, yeah. It's, I mean, I think the dance parallel is helpful, the sort of traditional understanding of choreography, because now instead of dancers, the choreographer, the emotional choreographer, is arranging and directing our emotions, or trying to anyway.
Yeah.
Guiding, that's a good word for choreography, guiding audiences through intimacy, tension, and release.
Right.
Like great drama always does, like great films, great stories always have a certain emotional choreography to them that's deliberate on the part of the author, and that's why they endure over the centuries.
Right. It kind of reminds me of a word that has kind of a little bit of a negative connotation, the word manipulate.
I feel like,
in a way, they are manipulating,
right?
They are manipulating our emotions. They're creating this sense of, you know, drawing us in through the intimacy, and then the tension of like, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then there's that big release that we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
Right?
But as you and I know, coming from the theater, the people whose emotions are being manipulated have agreed to have their emotions manipulated. Just like when the audience goes in to see a play in the theater, there's something called the willing suspension of disbelief.
Yes.
In which the audience says, okay, I know this is not real.
Yes.
I know these are actors on a stage, but I'm going to suspend my disbelief.
Yes.
I'm going to accept that this is real so that I can enter into it and have my emotions manipulated, if you like, for the sake of reaching a greater truth or having a greater experience.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, we have talked about a lot and we have a lot more to discuss in this article. So make sure you join us again tomorrow for another episode as we discuss the rest of this designing for the gasp. Until then, this is Campbell.
I'm Peter.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.